Accession number 3835, Reel 2.
Colonel Mundy, Reel 2. We were talking about recruitment.
Oh, yes. Recruitment, there were two tribes. One was a Wasakili, and I can't remember who we recruited from, and it was mainly up country. There's never any difficulty about recruiting. In fact, I sent my regimental sergeant major, who's a European, up country to recruit about 30 or 40 chaps. And he went round and he collected recruits beyond the border, it was. That's the central part. Where was stationed a battalion of the from Nyasaland. There was a small unit, rather like mine, up there. And he went round and collected quite a satisfactory lot of recruits with perfect facility. The KR was obviously quite popular because he had no difficulty. He went with a district officer, and the fellow said, "Oh yes, you go round to various villages and that sort of thing," which he did, and he collected about 30 or 40 recruits with the utmost facility. The arms, obviously, from the African point of view, was popular, and there was no difficulty getting. I mean, he got 100 recruits, but of course we couldn't take that because it wasn't beyond our numbers. And the medical officer examined them and see they hadn't got VD and that sort of thing. And this curious thing, which was down the tenant, yours it was, and it was so the medical people considered something rather congenital VD, which I don't think it really, but they didn't think that a chap with pronounced yaws would be a satisfactory recruit from that point of view. So when the medical chap said this fellow's got the order, you rejected him. It was a curious disease. They said it was congenital VD from days gone by, but then it might have an effect not satisfactory from a soldier's point of view. I never found it was, but we didn't take them. If the fellow had yours, he rejected. But the stature of the African there was, I should say, very high. And you had recruits came in which were active and keen to be soldiers, you see, which, of course, was a very great asset from that aspect, and they proved when they were trained extremely good soldiers.
Did you find that some of the people you rejected because of their health tried to get into the King's African Rifles anyway?
Sorry, I didn't quite get there.
Well, I remember that you told me about a case of one man who was rejected, but wouldn't accept this.
Oh, yes, yeah, yes. Well, he was so good, the sergeant major said, well, after he'd marched, he went from one village to the other, you see, about 30 miles, and this chap turned up again. having been told, sideways, oh, well, you're so jolly keen, and I don't think really he suffered from clap or something or other. Who took him on? His name, certainly name, but his name was, we named him Grease, because I couldn't recollect it. The sergeant major couldn't sort of, he was a rather a long name. But well, having shown such determination to join, the sergeant major said, well, sir, I took him on.
What was the general standard of health amongst your recruits?
Oh, good. Oh, yeah. We had no difficulty with the health of the doctor. Of course, we had the doctor came up from, and we had we organised amongst the troops who had wives. You see, in the lines, and once a week a lady doctor turned up from the hospital, and she went through the. I had the women all assembled in a little hut, which we had a little there, and she went through the women to see how they're getting on, and also, of course, prenatal prenatal treatment and so forth, because we tried to get the wives to go into hospital to have their babies. Some of them did. I mean, there was no compulsion about it, but just we tried to show that the advantage was that the woman went into hospital and was treated for her baby, and when she had a few days there, she came out with the baby. There was a certain amount of of a little difficulty, because you see, the natives had queer ideas. For instance, the severing of the umbilical cord was usually done in the bush with a couple of rather dirty, but sort of holy, as it were, not exactly holy, but regarded as the right sort of stone that should be severed. And they had to overcome that. And then there was a question of the white woman's hand touching the uterus, which they thought it's rather curious, but it was a fact that they thought that would render the woman barren, you see. And I just give those as two instances of the difficulties you had to go. And of course there was this business about hospital, which the natives said, because they said, well, Bwana, that's our name. We were known as Bwanas and that sort of thing. We man go to the hospital, he dies. I said, of course he dies, because he was in the last stages of pneumonia or something like that, or appendicitis he had. And of course you didn't give the... You can't, if you must give the doctors a chance to cure. But if he goes in practically dead, of course he dies. The doctors can't stop it. You follow what I mean? We overcame that to a certain extent, but it was there.
Were there any particular tribes that you recruited from?
Yeah, there were two. I can't remember. There was a Wasakili and there was one in Rambo or something like that. They were up. We did, yes, they were. But when my sergeant major went up, we other tribes turned up and they seemed satisfactory, so we took them on. Oh, yeah.
Were there any tribes that that you found you shouldn't mix together?
No. No. Oh, you mean intertribal trouble? Yeah, no. No, they seemed to... They seem to mix in quite satisfactorily. Right? Now, a little later on in the Uganda show, there was this question of the Luo and other tribes. Of course, you see, which is very prevalent now. The Luo, as you see, in Kenya, are hostile to the Kikuyus, very, very much so. And of course, they killed one of the Luo leaders. well, not recently, but not so very long ago, they knocked him on the head. And, of course, that... I would say when... about it, but if old Joshua Nkomo dies, because he holds the... he's a Kook and holds the fort, but... there will might be trouble between the Kooks and the Luas, but that's outside the KR show.
Was there any places that you didn't recruit troops from?
In Tanganyika, no. No. No.
Did you recruit troops from the town at all?
No, no, the mostly Africans from the bush. We found them more so. Town chaps who have to be a bit sophisticated and so forth. No.
How long did African troops serve for?
Must you ask these awkward questions? About 5 or 6 years, I should say. Something like that. I honestly, now I can't recollect. Neither here nor in Uganda. But I would say that 5 or 6 years.
Did they speak English to begin with?
No, no, no. But English was... we all spoke, to the troops in Tanganyika days. No, but English was coming in. I don't know whether it comes in now or not. But we had, in Uganda, when I was up there, we had an English chap from the Education Corps who teach the Africans English. Because it was realized eventually, they were rather hostile to the idea of English speaking when I was in Tanganyika. But it became obvious that with an outbreak of war, there would be a lot of... Europeans joining the army who might not speak the Urdu of the, oh, not the Urdu, the Tanganyika troops, and it was officially recognized that the troops should speak or should be taught English because of when the war broke out. Well, rather like this Welsh business, you see, that I told you before. It was most advantageous if the African enlisted spoke English so that officers were sent out from England, as they might, as of course they were in large quantities in the 1914 show, who had no idea of the Swahili. And to obviate that, the troops were taught with these education officers from the educational corps of, the Army Education Corps. They came out and taught English to the troops.
Did your subordinate officers have to speak the native languages?
Yes. So as we carried on with the sergeant who came out taught Swahili. Oh, yes. But it was, when I first arrived, the English was not, what should we say, popular with the idea. But it came round that, of course, with the experience of the African War, of the 1914 War, sorry, it would be much more suitable if the African did understand something about English, if we were trained them to speak the English tongue, as it were.
What were your duties as an acting major?
Well, I commanded the unit, just the same as any unit at home. There was the training and administration to be undergone. So it was really, units was a small unit, and we hadn't got artillery or tanks or anything like that. to train. It was more or less just a simple training.
What sort of training were the Africans given?
Well, they had the recruits came and they did normal recruit training as guard discipline, and the rifle and the machine gun. Some went into the machine gun unit to show signs of being able to train with the machine gun. And the machine gun chaps did very well. My machine gun unit in Tanganyika, there was a machine gun prize organized by from home amongst all the African units, and the Nyasaland chaps took part, as well as the chaps in Tanganyika, and my chaps, I think, twice won the prize in Tanganyika. It was a sort of course, and you find so practices, and they turned out to be the best.
What sort of training were the other troops given? The non-machine gun people?
Oh, just the of course, we developed a certain amount of bush warfare training, in case of which meant going round through the bush and putting up when you were in camp, rather like the Romans chaps in days when they dug in. You had to put up a bush in case they were rushed at night. You put up, cut the bush and put the prickly things to the front and so forth. You had to train and you had to go through the bush with considerable care in case of a sudden raid or action. That was the sort of a difference between training at home.
What type of equipment was issued to the African troops?
Similar to the British. You had your khaki with pouches for and so forth. It was the same type of equipment as used by the British soldiers at home.
How did they adapt to European style clothing? Did they have boots?
They did. When the war broke out, yes, they did. We had sandals. Boots were not, in Tanganyika, were not employed. They had sandals. Always rather a question of what sandal. It rather became a sort of headache. It was some of the sandals let stones in, you see, and the troops didn't like them. We had a bit of difficulty about evolving a satisfactory African sandal. We did get something going in the end, but it wasn't very good. But the troops all wanted to wear boots. Oh yes, them boots were very popular. You see, really, it was we wore boots, and the officers wore boots, and every European wore boots, and boots were the company sergeant majors wore boots, and the regimental sergeant major. And I remember I made a company sergeant major one morning. I told him he was going to be appointed to a company sergeant major, certain company. 2 o'clock in the afternoon, he's wearing boots.
What criteria did you use in promoting African NCOs?
Oh, much as similar as at home. He proved a disciplinarian, was efficient in his job, and could shoot well, and so forth, and developed the spirit of leadership. And as such, you promoted him as, well, very much similar to what it was at home, very much.
What was your impression of African NCOs?
They were satisfactory, with a reservation that from a distant point of view, it was rather the European that enforced the discipline rather than the NCO. They were a bit shy of running their own chaps, you know, onto a charge. They weren't very keen on that. I suppose it went on popularity in the barrack room and everything. They were all right, but it was really the European that enforced the discipline rather than the NCO. Yes.
Did you have much trouble enforcing discipline?
No. Africans very amenable to discipline. Oh no.
What sort of punishments did you use if you had occasion to use punishment?
Well, similar to there was CB and detention, which was rather difficult to. There were no detention barracks. When I joined, we were entitled to whack them. Unfortunately, you know, the word flogging turned in, which is always an opprobrious name. But we never flogged them. We gave them six on the bottom, I don't know you, but I got six on the bottom when I was a young boy on that term. That was accepted. You see, if you delayed a long time, the African memory was short, and he just wouldn't understand why he's being punished. I mean, if he was delayed for 12 or 14 days, I mean, a court-martial, of course, was quite hopeless. But by the time the thing had been assembled and that sort of thing, the African had forgotten clean what he'd done. He wanted to decide. I'll give one example of the whacking. I had occasion to give a chap, he'd been insolent to us. Whacking was really to be in, which I kept in my own hand, to insolence to an NCO or something like that. It was quite rare. But I had occasion once to give a chap six on the bottom for that thing. In the afternoon, I taught the troops to play hockey. This fellow was quite a good hockey player. I used to play back, outside, right, and he was outside left. And I gave him every opportunity to whack me on the... I mean, I could have said nothing if he'd hit me with his hockey stick on the foot or the ankle. I could have said nothing. He didn't. He played a perfectly fair game, though he'd had six on the bottom in the morning, which I thought was very good and showed the spirit. He was good. With Africans, you've got to be very patient indeed. You've got to listen to what they've got to say, and they'll tell you what they've got to say about four times over in front of you. You mustn't say anything. You must not interfere and say, well, look, I've heard all that before. He'll shut up like a clam and you'll see a sort of sudden look up and say, he hasn't had that. The final question, to my mind, is that all you've got to say? Well, finally, you've got to die or he's got to die first. Or something like that. That's all exaggeration, of course. But you've got to go on. And once you've got that out of him, is that all you've got to say? Yes. Wana, that's all I've got to say. Right. You're then in a position to weigh and say what you think about him and award whatever punishment you will feel justified in giving. It goes on for a long time. It's very wearying. But it's worth it. It's worth it. Because you get satisfaction out of the man.
What was the role of the KAR in Tanganyika?
Well, I suppose in case of action, we would defend the country. And if there's any trouble amongst the locals, then we would probably be called in, like troops would be called in at home to deal with the situation as it arose. But it never did arise. You may say defense of the country in case of action, and local disturbances, you would be called out, but we never were. It never occurred.
What were relations like between the European officers and the African troops?
Oh, very good. Oh, very good. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. They liked their officers. Some they liked, but not, of course. But that's human nature. But, oh, yes, there was no... crossness, should we say, between the African soldier and his officer.
What was the standard of pay of the African troop like compared to African civilians?
I should think it was about on a par, but I don't know. Of course, the African, he got food, you see. He got food, and he got housed, and he got doctored, like the troop at home. I guess I could hardly offer... I think it was... from what I've heard and so forth, they were really examined the question with any detail, about the same, I should think, except, of course, that the African soldier, he got fed and he got housed and he got doctored and so forth. And he was, well, I don't know, the European chap looked after his servants quite satisfactorily. I never heard of any real disturbance between an officer, the African and the civilian. No, I'm not really qualified to speak on that.
Were servants easily come by?
Oh, yes, quite easily come by, yes.
What was the diet of the African troops? Can you tell me something about their diet?
This posho, this maize meal, that was a... And a certain amount of, they bought that, a certain amount of meat. And the African woman cooked quite well. There was never really nothing like what went on at home. There was no difficulty about the cooking and the food. I never heard any Africans complain about